It is Sports Radio, WEI. It is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Number to join us here is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And I got to tell you, this is one of those nights where I'm really excited to be here. After what we did last night, I almost felt dirty leaving here last night. We spent, I don't know, 2 of the 4 hours we had together last night really questioning this Boston Celtics team. And for those of you people that have listened to me over the years, both here at EEI and then, you know, with the other stations, 890 and 1510 and everywhere else that I've been, you know that that's not something that I enjoy doing. But this start to the season has not been ideal, and we'll just put it that way. And we really spent a lot of time last night talking about Brad Stevens and how much accountability he really has to face here throughout the Celtics' first 10, 11 games of the season as they just continued to struggle, continued to get worse in a lot of areas where there was really no excuse, right? Like, I think we could all understand Gordon Hayward taking some time to work himself back into the system. And for those dozen or two dozen fools online on Twitter that are all over Gordon Hayward, I kept hearing from the same people saying that if you're on the floor, you should be 100%. There's no excuse. And that's just not realistic, right? So we don't blame Brad Stevens for that. I don't even blame Brad Stevens for the earlier season struggles of a guy like Kyrie Irving. But I felt like Brad had to have some accountability here through the Celtics' first 10 games because we were seeing regression from guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier. And then last night we heard about the infighting with Terry Rozier and the potential for a trade request, which Danny Ainge absolutely refuted today. And then what happens today? This Celtics team, they go on the road again, so it's their third consecutive game on the road in this 5-game road trip. And while they lost the first 2 games in Indiana, which pretty good team, a team the Celtics should be able to beat even on the road, but still a playoff caliber team in the Eastern Conference, and they go and they lose to the Nuggets, again, a team that the Celtics should be able to handle, but still a quality opponent. In both of those games, what happened? The Celtics blew a 13-point lead and an 18-point lead. To me, those were things that you can absolutely point to the coach at and say, hey, what is going on here? Where is this team's focus? Is there some sort of adjustment that Brad Stevens needed to make? And then tonight, what happened? If the Celtics went into Phoenix, a team that had only won 2 games going into tonight, just an abysmal basketball team, a basketball team that a couple of games ago was still starting Tyson Chandler at center, right? Because, I don't know, you have to at least play the part for the first 10 games of the season before you decide to blow it up and just play for the lottery. What happens? This team goes in there tonight, the Celtics go into Phoenix tonight, and they just look terrible. They look awful. They look apathetic. They look like they don't want to be there. They look nothing like the Celtics team that we all sort of fell in love with the last couple of years. I'm telling you, when they scored 13 points in the first quarter, that was it for me. I held my head so low as a Celtics fan, and I said, what the hell is happening to my basketball team? You know, we can find excuses. There are some reasonable excuses for some of the things that continued to go wrong for this team. And then they did it again in the second quarter. You know, they allowed Phoenix to outscore them again, if only by 1 point still. Phoenix should not be outscoring the Celtics in any quarter. Third quarter, signs of life. Fourth quarter, that's when the Celtics really started to look more and more like the Celtics. So what do we have here now? The Celtics somehow, some way, found a way to force overtime, and then they put their sort of pedal to the metal and showed who was the superior team. Now, I don't want to take a win over the Phoenix Suns and say, hey, this is the start of something special here, but we all know this. If you're listening to sports radio right now, we're pushing midnight. So if you're one of the ones that's up listening right now, it means that A, you're excited about what you just saw. B, you are a dedicated sports fan. So that means, C, I am going to take the equation here, and I'm going to get the answer. And the answer to this equation is what? It doesn't make a difference who the Celtics beat tonight. All that matters is the fact that they found a way to win. They're not going to look back at this Phoenix Suns team and say, hey, you know, that win, yeah, it was fun, but it doesn't really matter because the Suns, well, they're not going to the playoffs. They're not all that good. That's not how this team is going to look at this win. This has the potential to be one of those galvanizing wins that teams need at some point in the season. They do. This has the potential to be the win that the Celtics look back at and say, hey, that is the win that started a trend. That is the win that unified this team, that reminded this team that they can trust in one another. Because despite the fact that Jason Tatum continued to struggle, and despite the fact that you know, Gordon Hayward had a couple of nice moments in the second half, but he really continued to struggle. What'd you get? You got big contributions from Kyrie Irving, who was, again, Dale Arnold, a leader tonight. All right, do you still question his leadership, Dale Arnold? 39 points, not letting this game sort of get under his skin, continuing to be the driving force behind the Celtics, doing what leaders do. But it wasn't just him. Guy like Jaylen Brown, who has been up and down, more down than up this season. He stepped up, hit a couple of big shots, stayed with it after arguably getting fouled on that layup attempt after Kyrie had the nice pass, stayed with it, second shot opportunities, gets the Celtics within one. I mean, these are the things that win you this basketball game. Then Jaylen Brown, what's he do? He hits a critical three to essentially put the game away. So the Celtics, they win tonight in Phoenix, 116-109, in absolutely dramatic fashion. And I'll tell you what, this is a game where, at least me, as a Celtics fan, a Celtics observer, it's the type of game that I'm going to look back at potentially in a week or two and say, that was the game that galvanized this team. That was the game that unified this team. That was the type of game that this team needed, regardless of the opponent. It is Sports Radio, WEEI. It is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Plenty of room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937 is the Celtics with a dramatic overtime comeback victory in Phoenix tonight. Your final score in Phoenix, 116-109. The Celtics now 1-2 on their five-game road trip. We will be joined by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix coming up around 1240. You guys can see Chris Mannix right now on NBC Sports Boston doing the postgame show. So when he wraps that thing up, he'll join us here. Chris wrote an extended piece for Sports Illustrated yesterday about this Celtics team and the need for fans to have patience with this team. So it'll be a fun conversation with Chris coming up in a little while on the program. Until then, I want to take your phone calls. What does this game mean early on this season to this Boston Celtics team at 617-779-7937? Let's start with the calls right away. Let's go to Paul. Paul's in Westfield. Paul, you're first up here on WEI.
Wow, what a nice job. 7-point lead and won it in overtime. That's not too bad, as you would say, in the fatigue factor.
Yeah.
And control, I mean, you can't get much happier from what we just saw.
It was a must-needed win, Paul. We know that, right? But it's the way in which they did it. This reminded me of the type of win that last year's team would have had. Last year's team was sort of known for never giving in, always having the ability to come back. And this year's team really didn't match last year's team's intensity, the enthusiasm that they had, that never-say-die type attitude. Marcus Smart wasn't getting under the skin of opponents like he did last year. All the things we talked about last night. And it's all those intangibles that they applied in the second half of this game that allowed them to get back in.
Correct. And it's hard to do that when you're under fatigue. They say, and I witnessed it wrestling, I would stall. And then fatigue turns into marshmallows. But, Pat, I must say, I defended you today when those MFers in the afternoon only played your comment. They did your quote criticizing and questioning the coach. But I added, you also added to the point with Hayward not playing for about 5 weeks and the new group. And there's something else I just realized that I didn't add. This is a significant. You just mentioned last year's team. And think of what these teams at home are thinking about last year's team and taking Cleveland 7. So they're all gassed up and fired up because that's what they are expecting. And that's not realistic in now 11 games. We finally got together. But at 10, that's just too early, and we weren't really fatigue ready. And this is an indicator we're in the right direction.
Yeah, tonight's a big win, certainly. And listen, I heard you earlier today. I was listening, and I appreciated that. So those things don't go unnoticed, Paul. So thank you.
You're welcome, bud. It's good to hear balance and fairness.
We try here. So it is Sports Radio, WEI. It is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy, and I knew that they were going to do that because I knew they were listening. Lou sent me a nice text last night, said, hey, this is good. I'm enjoying this. This is fun. But I knew they were going to pick it apart because that's what they do. And what they typically do is the same thing that they do to Mutt on the morning show. They'll grab a segment of what you say. They'll twist it. They'll turn it to sort of fit their story. And that's fine. I don't mind being the butt of Glenn Ordway's joke. I'm just glad that Glenn knows who I am. But it is Sports Radio, WEI. It is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Plenty of room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937 as your Boston Celtics with a dramatic overtime comeback victory tonight, 116-109 in Phoenix. And the challenge tonight as we make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning, the challenge for me tonight is going to be to sort of temper my excitement after a win like this, because the fan in me comes out, right? And that's what drove me to sort of want to do this for a living all those years ago when I was a grade schooler and a high schooler. It was the fan in me. I mean, I was the guy that sent Red Auerbach a letter, and that's how I got started doing this when I was in high school, right? So that fan in me is always going to come out, especially after a game like this, after a win like this, especially after feeling as down as I felt watching this game, listening to this game, following this game online, continuing to see guys struggle. I mean, I'm not going to let this thing wrap up tonight without giving some you-know-what to Jason Tatum and Al Horford. Because again, you know, Kyrie Irving played the role of hero. 39 points again tonight, 13 for 28 from the field, 6 of 13 from 3. You know, Kyrie Irving was outstanding, 7 rebounds, 6 assists in 43 minutes. He did everything he could to single-handedly win this game for the Boston Celtics. And when you're playing a team like the Phoenix Suns that is short on talent, that is short on expectations, that had only won 2 games thus far this season, if you're as talented as Kyrie Irving is, hell, you can carry your team to victory on the road, even when you're down by 20 points. That's how good Kyrie Irving is, especially compared to a team like the Phoenix Suns. But if this Celtics team is ever going to live up to the expectations that we sort of set for them at the start of the year, Jason Tatum can't score 4 points. Al Horford's got to do more. 33 minutes, 3 for 7 from the field. Hit a huge 3. Give him credit for hitting that huge 3. But what's troubling to me isn't even the 7 points. It's Al Horford once again. He has 6 rebounds and 3 assists. You know, where's the Al Horford factor? Where is Al Horford when you need him? We called him out last night a little bit here too. And I'm the biggest Al Horford fan there is. I call him All-Star Al. There's no such thing as Average Al. He does not exist, in my opinion. All that being said, All-Star Al, he is the veteran leader of this basketball team. He is the guy that the young guys look up to. He is the guy that, you know, essentially sets the tone, sets the tempo. He is the defensive anchor for this basketball team. Offensively, we all saw what he was capable of in last year's playoffs. Emotionally, we saw what he was capable of in last year's playoffs. And thus far this season, there's been a lot of apathy coming from All-Star Al. And on a night like this, it wasn't Al Horford that led them back. It wasn't Al Horford that led the charge. And one of these nights, Al Horford has to break through. Otherwise, I might have to go on Team Lou. And I don't want to do that because I don't think Lou's right. I don't think Lou's correct. But if this Celtics team is ever going to live up to the expectations that we set forth, that they set forth for themselves, Al Horford has to do more than 7 and 6. And I'm sorry, I know that Jason Tatum is one of the most talented young players in the league, but it's games like this that remind me that I would be okay trading a package centered around Jason Tatum for a guy like Anthony Davis. Because he's going to have these games, 4 points, only taking 7 shots in 30 minutes. I mean, that is inexcusable. The limited attempts for Jason Tatum, I don't know if that's a Tatum problem. I don't know if that's a coaching problem. But for a guy that spent a part of the summer working out with Kobe Bryant, I mean, didn't Kobe teach him the one thing that Kobe knew better than anybody else? You can't score if you don't shoot. I mean, Kobe was a volume scorer because he was a volume shooter. 7 shots for Jason Tatum just isn't going to get it done against most of the NBA. It is Sports Radio WEI. It is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. Let's stick with the calls here. Let's go to Stuart. Stuart's in Maine. Stuart, you're next up here on WEI.
Hey, how you doing? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, Stuart. How are you?
Good, yeah. I really like what you just had to say about Al Horford being the driving force for the Boston Celtics. It seems like if there's just a lot of identity crisis going on within the Celtics. It seems like, I don't know, Jason Tatum gets the ball, Jaylen Brown gets the ball, Kyrie Irving gets the ball, but it doesn't seem like the team is really being a team right now. It's kind of confused. I would just love to hear your thoughts on, like, how can we kind of solidify who's our team leader? Because that seems to be the biggest issue right now. It's like, who's going to get the ball in the final 10 seconds of the game?
Well, I mean, that's going to be Kyrie Irving. I mean, I think that point has been somewhat established, but it's everybody else. It's who's your secondary scorer? You know, who's your go-to guy? These other questions here that need to be answered. We finally saw signs of life from a guy like Marcus Smart. We talked about him a lot last night where I felt like Marcus Smart got paid and he forgot why he got paid. And tonight, he was an aggressor once again. He was a thorn in the side of the Phoenix Suns, and that's what you need him to be. But you're right. There is an identity crisis here. And there has been all season long. The one thing that I will say is refreshing and gives me a little bit of additional hope here tonight is that over the course of the last 2 weeks, Stuart, part of that identity crisis has been solved. Kyrie Irving has stepped up after a poor first four games of the season. He's averaging 30 points a game since then. So he clearly has stepped up and sort of grabbed the reins of that team leader, offensively at least.
Ever since the haircut, you know? The haircut really determined Kyrie Irving, you know?
Just the haircut. It's as simple as that. And maybe everybody else should go shave their heads, Stuart. Man, I appreciate the phone call.
No, I'm working on it. Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, it is Sports Radio. WEEI, it is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937 as we make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. Look, we're going to talk about this Celtics game for a while. We're going to talk about this team for a while. This was a must needed victory for the Boston Celtics. I'm not going to sit here and overstate how important this game was, but I am going to say that I've watched enough basketball over the years to know that there are games like this sometimes that can sort of serve as a galvanizing type of game, a game that really unifies a basketball team. And a game like this could have gone either way, where if the Celtics went into Phoenix tonight and got their asses handed to them, like it looked like they were going to do, coming out of the first quarter down 32-13, right? Imagine all the second-guessing then. Imagine all the second-guessing questioning of this team's assortment of talent. That means you're questioning Danny Ainge. Imagine all the questioning of the head coach. I mean, does Terry Rozier have a point? These are sort of the things that would come up and bubble up, not only after losing two consecutive games in the manner in which they did, blowing double-digit leads, a 13-point lead, an 18-point lead on the road against the Pacers, on the road in Denver. Those are tough enough to swallow. But then if you follow that up with getting your ass kicked against an abysmal team that is simply fighting for lottery position in the Phoenix Suns, a team that's already sold off their lone veteran piece to the Los Angeles Lakers, said, goodbye, we don't want you, Tyson Chandler. We don't need you here. You're a veteran. You've been in the league for 18 years. You don't fit with our lottery plan, right? That's where this team is, a team that's already fired their general manager. Like, this team has got no interest in winning. If the Celtics went in and lost the way that it looked like they were going to lose, that's when things could have got very ugly here. But on the contrary, you know, you flip that thing around, it doesn't make a difference that the Suns suck. It doesn't make a difference that the Suns are fighting for lottery position. Because the fact is this, the Celtics went in, and for a portion of this game, later on in the game, midway through the fourth quarter, through the entirety of overtime, they showed they've got a backbone. They showed they've got some balls. They showed they've got some Celtic pride. And that was three of the things that we have questioned for the entirety of this season. So for those reasons and those reasons alone, they get to get on the plane tonight, headed off to their next game on this road trip, heading off to Utah tomorrow night, feeling good about themselves and really feeling good about themselves for the first time in a long time. Because a game like this, you do not remember the opponent and you do not remember how you got there. All these guys will remember is how they felt running off that floor tonight, knowing they absolutely stole one in Phoenix. It is Sports Radio. WEI, it is Late Night. Room for you at 617-779-7937. Let's grab one more here. Let's go to Mike. Mike's in North Providence. Mike, you're next up here on WEI.
Hi, Patrick. You know, for me, the main story of this and the main lesson to take away was shooting jump shots dug them a gigantic hole against a team that doesn't play defense. Attacking the basket got them a victory. I mean, I think they had about 5 free throw attempts in the first half, and they had 26 free throw attempts after halftime or something like that.
You're right. They went to the basket more in the second half. And again, it was almost their inability to hit free throws that did them in late in the fourth quarter, though, Mike. I mean,
Patrick,
it was bad.
You're going to hit free throws. You have to get to the line first to hit a free throw. All right?
I'll give you that.
You have to attack the basket to get to the line.
Yep.
And not only that, but look at Jaylen Brown. First half, very passive, kind of like finesse on the offensive end. Second half, barreling his way to the cup, right? I know he missed back-to-back free throws at one point, but he had hit the other four. But this is the story. 17 points after halftime, 0 points before halftime. I mean, this is the thing. They could have done – this is the same team that they faced. You see the point? It's the Suns both times.
Yep.
But it's the approach. It was them sabotaging themselves.
Okay, but they've been doing that a lot this year. So was this something that Brad Stevens sort of found at halftime, or did once and for all this team sort of just get sick of losing, sick of just shooting threes? Again, tonight you look at the three-point field goal percentage, 37%. That's okay, but they shot 37 three-pointers tonight, and they weren't going down. Eventually they started going down, but to your point, Mike, that's not why they won the game. They won the game because they started doing the things that they hadn't done all season long. We talked about it last night. Going into tonight's game, they were last in the league in shots attempted at the basket and 25th in the league in free throws attempted. Yep. Well, look what happens tonight. They go to the basket. They get to the free throw line. It's sort of amazing how that works, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, and against the same team, you got to see it's like a snapshot before and after. This is what happens when you just – because part of the thing is they can't just keep on kind of like passing around for the open jumper. But you can't – sometimes you're settling for the open jumper. It's like, you know what? I know it's Gordon Hayward and he's open. But you know what? Dunk the basketball. Go attack the basket, right? And get yourself into rhythm too by doing that. Put the other team on the back foot. I mean, is this something that's completely in their control? And you know, another thing you were talking about. I mean, listen, Marcus Morris, great shot at the end, but to me, some of this, what's going on with him, is at the expense of Tatum. There's only so many shots to go around. Tatum, he was like that last year too. He'll disappear if you allow him to disappear. He kind of needs the ball. And even in the playoffs, when he had his really good games, they were games that he had the ball on. And he's great at creating for himself, but he can also kind of like fade out if you allow him to. And part of that problem is when you have other guys that are chewing up, time with the ball and taking shots, it makes it easier for him to fade out in a way. I feel that if you traded away Terry Rozier and Marcus Morris, he'd suddenly bloom.
I don't disagree with that. But again, Brad Stevens, and I said this last night, Mike, he has the hardest job in the NBA right now because he's trying to win games, live up to this team's very high expectations of reaching the NBA Finals, while at the same time continuing to groom guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and even Terry Rozier to a certain extent. It's the hardest thing to do, to continue those guys on their path, their progression of eventual greatness, while balancing that with winning games. Because to your point, if you don't have Marcus Morris out there and you run that play, which, by the way, I was all over Brad Stevens last night, but a beautifully drawn up play to open up that three, free up that three. If that three goes to Jason Tatum, chances are he doesn't hit it. He had a 3-point field goal attempt tonight that could have iced the game in overtime. And not only did he miss it, it was the way that he missed it. He was hesitant. He second guessed himself before he shot it. He's not playing confidently right now.
Some guys, a lot of people are like this. It's actually the rare shooters that are like John Paxson's and Steve Kerr's that can get by and be efficient when they're not shooting the ball that much. It's kind of like it's a knack that not everybody's going to have. A guy like Tatum, the difference between him taking 15 shots and 7 is enormous. You go and give him 15 shots, he will get right into rhythm. I mean, there are a lot of guys like that.
No, he's a scorer. He's a scorer, not a shooter. I mean, and that's something we talk about a lot here. Mike, listen, I appreciate the phone call. Great stuff tonight. But he's a scorer, not a shooter. And, scorers can become shooters, but it doesn't go the other way around, right? And that's why last night we talked about right now the Cleveland Cavaliers are talking about having a potential fire sale. And if they do, I think the Celtics should do everything in their power to get a guy like Kyle Korver here, because Kyle Korver at 38 years old is one of those John Paxson, Steve Kerr type of shooters. He can come off the bench ice cold and still be able to shoot the ball at a elite rate from three. And that's what you're looking for if you're trying to complete the roster of a championship or potential championship team. You'll need a guy like that. But as far as Jason Tatum goes, the Celtics know how talented he is, and they know that they cannot afford for him to take another step back here. And tonight, he's a plus 15 while he's out there on the floor. He was able to get 8 rebounds, which is a nice number for him rebound-wise, but 4 points is not going to get it done. But I'm not comfortable with taking shots away from Marcus Morris right now. The Celtics are 7-4 to start the season. If you're taking these shots away from Marcus Morris the way that he's played to start this season, you're probably lucky to be 5-6 at this point. It is Sports Radio. WEI, it is late night. Let's load them up tonight as your Boston Celtics. They make a dramatic comeback victory in Phoenix tonight, overcoming deficit after deficit after deficit, turning on that defensive pressure late in the fourth quarter, forcing overtime on a three-point field goal by Marcus Morris, and then doing what the Celtics do in overtime. Your final score, 116-109, a much-needed feel-good victory for the Celtics. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about what happens next as they play a very good Utah team coming up in about, 20 hours. We'll talk about that when we come back right here, Sports Radio, WEI. It is 12:10 a.m., and here's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com. A very high-scoring game over at the TD Garden tonight. Jake DeBrusk, he scored two goals for the Bruins, but that wasn't even close to enough. The Bruins, they drop an 8-5 decision to Vancouver, giving up the most goals for the team so far this season. The Celtics, they were down by 20 points at halftime to the Phoenix Suns, but they were able to tie the game at 100 on a buzzer-beating three by Marcus Morris, which sent the game into overtime, and in overtime, the Celtics, they hit their first six shots and went on to win 116-109. The Celtics, they will be in Utah for a game against the Jazz tomorrow night. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they put up their biggest number in the NFL this year as they blew out the Carolina Panthers 52-21 in Thursday Night Football, heard right here on Sports Radio WEI. Ben Roethlisberger, he threw for five touchdowns, and Antonio Brown, he extended his streak to seven straight games in which he scored at least one receiving touchdown. The Steelers were still without Le'Veon Bell, who has missed 10 weeks without signing his $14.5 million franchise tag, and he must report by Tuesday or he forfeits the 2018 season completely. And today, Red Sox outfielders J.D. Martinez and Mookie Betts, they have received the 2018 American League Louisville Slugger Silver Slugger Awards. Betts, he earned the honor as an outfielder, while Martinez, he was recognized as both an outfielder and a designated hitter. Weather in Boston tonight, it is chilly out there, about 39 degrees with clear skies. Tomorrow, another sunny day, but rain moves in later on in the day, temperatures in the 40s. I'm Patrick Gilroy, and that's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com. It is late night right here, Sports Radio, WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. As always, the number to join me here, 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And we will start the program tonight, the first hour, talking about the Celtics. They are deserving of our attention tonight. Last night, they were deserving of our negative attention. We spent a tremendous amount of time last night really getting on this team. And a lot of those problems that we talked about last night haven't been healed. They haven't gone away just because the Celtics managed to pull out sort of a miraculous victory out of their ass tonight, which is essentially what they did. Let's face it, the Celtics down by 20 on the road to the Phoenix Suns, not a very good basketball team, but the Celtics did not look like a very good basketball team for most of this game as well. And it really took desperation time to, get the Celtics to wake up a bit. And once they inched their way back into the game, you know, you sort of felt like they had an outside chance here. And when I pulled up to the studio, I've got, an hour and 10-minute drive in from New Hampshire. So by the time I got here, there was 4 minutes and 10 seconds left in the game. And I was debating whether to get out of my car or not. I was listening, and the Celtics had got within 12. And Sean Grandy's going nuts. And the Celtics, they're back in the game. And I'm sort of chuckling, thinking to myself, maybe last year's team, down 12 with 4 minutes to go, maybe last year's team would have had a shot. But no way this year's team has got a shot. And I decide to come in, and I watch Jaylen Brown miss a couple of free throws. I watch the Celtics miss opportunities. I watch Jaylen Brown miss a rebound opportunity. So in other words, every time they grabbed the momentum, they didn't capitalize on that momentum. What we saw tonight was a heroic performance, a superstar performance from Kyrie Irving. And we can sit here and we can break down everything else that went wrong. It's more of the same. Again, it's another game where Jason Tatum doesn't look like the Jason Tatum that we got to know last year. It's another game where Gordon Hayward, sure, he had his moments, but Gordon Hayward, again, not even close to enough. 25 minutes tonight. Last night, we bitched about Gordon Hayward only taking 7 shots in his previous game. Tonight, he took 8 shots. Still not enough. Winds up with 8 points tonight. 4 rebounds, a couple of assists. That's the 4th highest paid player in the NBA. And again, I don't expect him to be the 22-point-a-game guy that he was in Utah. No. But I do want to see him inch closer to that guy as these games sort of move on. And to me, he's sort of stalemated at this level of play. Somebody that's capable of scoring 8 to 12 points a night and helping this team, but certainly not somebody that is showing signs of improvement. Certainly not somebody that is showing signs of eventually rounding back into the guy that the Celtics rewarded with the fourth highest contract, the fourth richest contract in the history of the league. So those problems continue to persist. You know, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown has been a problem as well. Tonight, it was awesome to see Jaylen Brown come to play in the second half. 0 points, shut out, goose-egged in the first half. It was a complete change in attitude and style of play from Jaylen Brown and from Kyrie Irving that really got this Celtics team back in this game. And I hope it's contagious, because that's what's going to have to happen here. This isn't about Brad Stevens sort of drawing up different plays. And that's what we talked about last night. We talked about what moves can Brad Stevens make to loosen up and free up this offense. And I firmly believe that at some point here in the not-so-distant future, I believe Gordon Hayward's got to go to the bench. I do. And not because he belongs there for the rest of the season. I feel like he's got to go to the bench because by moving him to the bench and maybe putting in a guy like Semi Ojeleye or Marcus Smart, somebody that doesn't need the basketball, somebody that's not looking for their points, somebody that's simply out there to defend, to rebound, to make positive contributions in other ways other than scoring, I feel like that'll sort of free up guys like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kyrie Irving, even Al Horford to score more. Because right now, this team, again, they start out this game tonight and they look lost out there. They look unsure of themselves. They don't look like the confident bunch that you would expect five potential all-stars to be. It's just not working. And for Gordon Hayward's sake, I feel like if he came off the bench and he was this team's sixth man, well, suddenly in that role, he's allowed to be the offensive leader of that second unit. He's allowed to be the primary offensive option of that second unit. He's allowed to suddenly take not 7 or 8 shots. He takes 10, 12, 15 shots because he is forced to score more as the leader of that second unit. And I think it would certainly help him and it would benefit him in the long run if he's out there playing against other teams' second units. Because let's face it, they're not quite as talented. And Gordon Hayward needs a couple of games where he goes off for 20 points. He does. Confidence-wise, his mentality has got to be that he can get back to the guy that he used to be. And I feel like if he watches himself put the ball in the basket to that extent where he has back-to-back games, you know, 18 points, 22 points, something like that, then his confidence is going to get built back up. And that's only going to help this team in the long run, because make no mistake about it, it's nice to get a win like this. And we'll sit here, we can feel good about this win until the Celtics make their way to Utah tomorrow night. I don't want to take anything away from this team for this great comeback victory. But winning in Phoenix is not sort of going to, it's not going to solve everything that ails this Celtics team. It's not. And it's not something that eventual potential NBA Finals contenders really want to sit there and celebrate. Now, the fact is, this was a much-needed victory. The Celtics went on the road, and they looked bad in portions of their first two road games, their first three road games, including tonight. Tonight, they looked worst of all. That first quarter of play was one of the worst quarters of basketball I have seen any team that Brad Stevens has coached ever play. And that's going all the way back to his first year here when the Celtics were a 25-win basketball team. That's how bad that first quarter was. Not only was it bad offensively, but they allowed the Phoenix Flippin' Suns to go out there and humiliate them. They gave up 32 points. It's one thing if you go out there and you score 13, but you hold your opponent to 17 or 18 because your identity is this great defensive team. That's not what we saw from the Celtics tonight. We saw a team that was disinterested. We saw a team that wasn't coached up, wasn't prepared, simply looked like they checked out before the game even began. And that's why a game like this is so significant. That's why winning a game in this manner, this style, this fashion means so much. Because, again, it's a complete 180. The way they finished the game as opposed to the way they started the game is a total 180. And for the first time in about 10 days here, this Celtics team gets to feel good about themselves. But what do they do next? What's the next logical move? See, tomorrow night, I don't think Gordon Hayward's going to play. I don't think it's been announced yet. But it was announced earlier this season that he's got a minutes restriction of about 25 minutes a night and that he's not planning on playing back-to-back games to start the season. So I don't think Gordon Hayward's going to play despite the fact that this team is in Utah tomorrow. Now you watch tomorrow night in that first quarter without Gordon Hayward as a part of this starting lineup. The offense is going to move much freer. It's going to be much looser because the shots are going to be sort of more natural for everybody else. If you remove one dynamic offensive player from this starting lineup, anybody not named Kyrie Irving, then I think that the offense gets a little bit easier because, you know, it's sort of predetermined who's got to score. Right now, everybody's trying to set everybody else up. You know, everybody's too worried about, okay, is it my turn? Is it your turn? Whose turn is it? That doesn't work, and we've seen it throughout the course of NBA history. Go back and watch the first 30 games of the 2010-2011 Miami Heat team. They did the exact same thing. Everybody was hesitant, from Chris Bosh to LeBron James to Dwayne Wade. Everybody was hesitant. Everybody was sort of making sure that their teammates got theirs because nobody wanted to really step up and be the alpha. The one good thing about the Celtics struggling here over the last couple of weeks is that it's forced Kyrie Irving to step up and establish himself as the Celtics alpha, as the Celtics team leader. And that's what this team desperately needs. They need somebody capable of being that guy. Clearly, Kyrie Irving is that guy. But he can't do it alone. We saw the Isaiah Thomas show here 2 years ago. And to have one guy capable of putting up 30 points a night, that's good enough to get you into the conference finals, maybe, and get humiliated. That was the whole point of this team. The whole point of this team versus the team that Danny Ainge blew up was that this team had the additional talent. This team was deep enough. This team was going to be the Celtics team that was finally able to break through the Eastern Conference because it wasn't just the Isaiah Thomas show. It's not just the Kyrie Irving show. But thus far this season, they've really struggled putting together games in which all of their stars sort of shine through. And they still haven't managed to do that. And if they are going to live up to the expectations that we have set for them and live up to the expectations that they have set for themselves, then at some point here, don't guys like Gordon Hayward and Jason Tatum and Al Horford and Jaylen Brown have to be more consistent? Because to the caller's point in the first segment when we were talking about this team, on one hand, we're happy that Marcus Morris hit this critical shot tonight. We're thrilled at the early season performance from Marcus Morris. But in no normal NBA situation should there be this scenario in which Marcus Morris is getting, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 10 more shots a night than Jason Tatum or than Al Horford. That just shouldn't happen. Then Gordon Hayward. Look at that. Gordon Hayward, 8 shot attempts tonight. Jason Tatum, 7. Al Horford, 7. Simply inexcusable. And then Marcus Morris, he's not afraid to fire it up. 13 shot attempts tonight. And that is par for the course. That's actually low for Marcus Morris compared to what he usually does. I mean, he goes out there, he knows his role. It is simply to put the ball in the basket. And I struggle with this identity of Marcus Morris because why is he unafraid to go out there and do what he needs to do and establish himself as a legitimate offensive leader for this basketball team, and yet we know how much more supremely talented a guy like Jason Tatum is to Marcus Morris. Yet Jason Tatum is out there, he is hesitant, he's unsure of himself, he's second-guessing himself. The Celtics will never reach the heights in which we expect them to reach without those guys really morphing into the guys that we expect them to be. So after this dramatic comeback victory, and after the sort of feel-good vibes wear off, I wonder what you guys think here at 617-779-7937. Does this game have the potential of being one of those galvanizing moments for this team? Is this the sort of game that this team desperately needed to remind themselves of the team that they're capable of being, to remind themselves that, yes, this team, much like last year's team, is capable of these sort of big comebacks and they're never out of a game and that sort of fight and drive that has been the identity of these Brad Stevens-led teams? Because that is not what we saw through the first 10 games of this season. We saw a team that wanted a front run. We saw a team that thought that they were better than the total sum of their parts. We saw a team that was talking about winning multiple championships before they've even reached the NBA Finals. That's what the first 10 games of this season brought us. Everything that I hate about the NBA, actually, and I'm the biggest NBA guy there is. I said it last night. I have gotten all over LeBron James for years for the stunt that he pulled when he went to the Miami Heat. That horrific, I wouldn't call it a press conference, that introductory thing that he did up there on the stage where he said, not 3, not 4, not 5, not 6, not 7, talking about championships. Like they're a given. Like they're easy to get. I mean, I was brutal when it came to my analysis of LeBron James for years because of that. I judged him because of that. And yet, Jaylen Brown, one of the most intelligent guys in the NBA today, just an astute person, again, a terrific musical artist, terrific classical piano player, a brilliant mind, somebody that wants to get his PhD someday. When you listen to him speak, he's so eloquent. He goes out there 2 days ago, 48 hours ago. You guys saw the clip on Twitter. I want to win 5 championships in the next 6 years. It's no different than what LeBron James did 5-6 years ago. It's exactly the same thing. So if I'm going to get all over LeBron James for doing that, of course, I'm going to be super critical of Jaylen Brown doing that. Un-Celtic-like. What we saw tonight was refreshing because it reminded me of last year's Celtics team. And last year's Celtics team was, I don't know, very Celtic-like, meaning they fought tooth and nail to get where they got. Tonight was sort of a flashback to that. This team, until they establish their offense, until these guys establish their identities, they need to find a way to grind out victories. So I'm wondering if tonight's formula of grinding out the victory in the second half is sustainable, or if it's more of a product of the Suns just suck. I don't know. We'll talk about that when we come back. And coming up in a little while, we'll also be joined by Chris Mannix from NBC Sports Boston and Sports Illustrated. He'll join us around 12:40. Until then, I want to take your phone calls at 617-779-7937. It is late night right here, Sports Radio WEEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. As always, the number to join me here, 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And I apologize towards the end of that last segment. My voice was going. It'll probably happen again. I'm fighting something, but I'm going to fight through it just like the Celtics fought through that second half. If it goes completely, whatever. I mean, that's what happens after midnight here, right? It's not like it's going completely during a morning drive or afternoon drive. That would be devastating. But I'm a gamer. I'm here. I've got a sore throat. And some of that sore throat, not all of it, but a small percentage of that sore throat might have something to do with me screaming at the TV here just before we went on the air. Because that was a very exciting end to this Celtics game. It was. And it was, in my opinion, a game where, you know, some people on Twitter tonight, the reaction is this. It's very simple. It's like, don't freak out. Don't go nuts. It was only a win over the Suns. And that's all well and good. I get that. The Suns are a team that's lottery bound. They're a team that wants to go to the lottery. They're not trying to win basketball games for the most part. But this Celtics team, they needed a game like this. This Celtics team needed to find a way to feel good about themselves. And I'll tell you what. The one thing that throughout this stretch of sort of troubling basketball, the stretch that has forced me to potentially question Brad Stevens a bit, which is taboo in this town. It blows my mind that we can't sit here and ever question Brad Stevens. And it also blows my mind, by the way, that when you do question Brad Stevens, for the few people that have done it, that questioning is interpreted as you don't want Brad Stevens here. Like, that's not the case at all. It doesn't have to be one or the other. I feel like through the first 10 games of the season, Brad Stevens could have done a better job. I don't think Brad Stevens is the reason why the Celtics came back tonight and won this game. That's on the players. Give them all the credit in the world. But I will say this, credit where credit is due. Brad Stevens drew up a tremendous play with 6 seconds left in regulation to get Marcus Morris that wide open shot from the top of the key. That right there is the brilliance of Brad Stevens, forcing the double team on Kyrie Irving, knowing Kyrie was going to get doubled because of the way that he's been shooting. And then you get Marcus Morris, who's been great from three to start this season, with a wide-open look top of the key. That's all you're looking for, is an opportunity at that point. And that's exactly what Brad Stevens did. So he drew up a great play for a guy capable of hitting that shot. So credit where credit is due, right? But I feel like throughout the first 10 games of the season, going into tonight, game number 11, Brad could have done a better job handling some of these situations. Even to the point where yesterday he had a quote. The Celtics were practicing in Phoenix. And he said that he was satisfied with 6-4 through the first 10 games. And now I understand the Celtics had the hardest schedule through the first 10 games of the season as well. But how could he be satisfied with his team, a team that thinks that they're in the championship discussion, losing the manner in which they lost? That's what was troubling to me. Not the fact that they were 6-4, now that they're 7-4. That doesn't trouble me at all. The record is one thing, right? The record, they'll get over. It's the manner in which they were losing these games. Remember how sick you guys felt tonight through the first half of this game as the Celtics were down, 32-13 at the end of the first and down 20 at halftime? That's that same sick feeling we all had as we watched the Celtics give up their lead against the Pacers. Then we watched it again as the Celtics gave up an 18-point lead against the Nuggets. I mean, in a perfect world, this Celtics team should be 3-0 on this trip. So there's got to be some accountability there. So for the first 2.5 games of this trip, I was sick to my stomach over what this team was unable to do on the court. They looked like the young team. They looked like a frazzled team. They didn't look like a team on the precipice of being in the championship discussion. And then tonight for the second half, we saw a team that I think realized that and played with a new sense of desperation. And it's that same sense of desperation that the Celtics played with throughout last year's playoffs. Watch what Jaylen Brown did tonight. If you DVR'd the game, or if you want to watch it in the overnight hours tonight, because NBC Sports Boston, I'm sure, will replay this thing later. Watch Jaylen Brown's second half, and then go back and remember what he was like throughout the playoffs last year, playing with that reckless abandon, playing with aggression, getting to the free throw line, and once he started hitting his free throws and getting to the basket and really forcing the defense to recognize the fact that he can get to the basket, once that opened up for him, he started hitting his threes, because the threes weren't quite as well defended as the defenders had to honor the fact that Jaylen could get to the free throw line, Jaylen could get to the basket. He looked like the guy that we saw blossoming throughout last year's playoff run. And that, to me, is what I'll take away from this game. Not to mention the fact that Kyrie Irving, over his last 5 games, is simply playing at an MVP level, averaging nearly 30 points a night on 56% shooting 53% from three, averaging 5 rebounds and 5 assists. That's just absolutely incredible. Now the Celtics, now Brad Stevens, now they've got to get the other guys going, because without Gordon Hayward, without Jason Tatum, without Al Horford, you're not going to win games against teams that aren't as bad as the Phoenix Suns. It is Sports Radio WEI. It is late night. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. Back out to the phones we'll go. Let's go to Leah. Leah's in New York. Leah, you're next up here on WEI.
Thanks, Patrick. Hey, you know, I think I was watching a different game, because I don't see this as a galvanizing win for this team. I mean, you know, after the second game last year, every game was must-see. They poured their hearts out on the floor. This year, it's every game is infuriating. 4-for-19 to start the game. It's like an atrocious product. And all I saw tonight was Kyrie Irving bailing them out in the last 10 minutes and giving it all. And Marcus Morris was impressed, don't get me wrong. And I hear what you're saying about Jaylen Brown. But, I mean, it's Jason Tatum. I mean, thanks for nothing, Kobe. I mean, what is he doing? He's completely out of sync. And what has happened to their shot making? Nothing goes down. Layups, mid-range, perimeter, whatever it is. It's in and out every game. I don't understand that. Maybe you were listening to the game on the radio, but I had to turn the game down on television because I couldn't listen to Scal. I mean, it was crazy. He was such a homer tonight. I mean, everything was good. There's no player like Kyrie. They're going to bring it back. I mean, this team is terrible. I wish they would continue to call him out. Honestly, I wish they still lost by 20 tonight, because that's what they deserve to do.
Well, Lee, they're not a terrible team. They're not. Have they been bad to start the season? Yeah, but the same team that went to the conference finals last year is back, and they added additional talent. What this team is, they have an identity crisis right now, though, because last year they knew going into those games that it was going to be Jason Tatum, it was going to be Jaylen Brown, it was going to be Terry Rozier. They didn't have to look over their shoulders. And I said this to start the show, I feel like a big part of the reason why the Celtics are struggling this year is because Brad Stevens has got the hardest job in the NBA, Lee. When you look at what he's got to do, on one hand, he has to satisfy the needs of the fans and satisfy what we expect from this basketball team. We all expect them to be an NBA Finals contender. That's what Las Vegas said. That's what the media is saying. That's what the pundits are saying. And that's what this team expects, quite frankly. And when you look at the level of talent, forget what you saw through the first 11 games this year. Just looking at the talent on the roster, it's certainly enough talent to reach the NBA Finals, especially in the Eastern Conference. So you got to look at that and say to yourself, okay, how do you continue to win games while getting Gordon Hayward back on track, getting him healthy, getting him right, which is going to take a few months? It took Kyrie Irving the first 10 games of the season, 10 days of the season, first 5 games, to start to look right. But now you've got young guys. People forget how young Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are. They took huge leaps last year, but now they have to learn how to play a completely different way, because they've got to share the basketball with not one but two more all-stars that they weren't sharing the ball with, I don't know, what, late February last year through June, essentially. So it's a completely different way in which they've got to play, which is why, by the way, I'm advocating that Gordon Hayward goes to the bench. Because I feel like if he goes to the bench, he can be the offensive leader of that second unit that solves one problem because the second unit, besides Marcus Morris, is having a hard time putting the ball in the basket. It frees him up for more shot opportunities, which hopefully gets him back on track faster. But more importantly, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown feel like they need to do more because right now you're seeing them be passive. Last year they were never passively.
Right, but the thing that worries me is, okay, Kyrie's back, and the character that emerged on this team last year and that fight, you know, how do you not come out after, you know, barely scraping out 6-4? How do you not come out against a Phoenix team tonight and just try to bury him early? And so give a chance maybe to Hayward to maybe light it up tonight. Instead, they're letting them score 30 in the first quarter, and they're down by 20. I mean, where is that character? I mean, through 11 games, I get what you're saying, but I feel like I should see more of that DNA in this team already.
I don't disagree. There's a reason why this team has been number one or number two. It's been going back and forth sort of all season long defensively, so there is some effort there. And I'll tell you what, your Kyrie point, I think that you're sort of hinting around that their character is similar to the character of Kyrie, and maybe that's not the character that you want. Is that what you're trying to say?
To a degree. You know, I mean, listen, I can't fault him tonight. I mean, you know, I walked up the court exhausted, and he won that game for us. But, you know, and he did actually distribute in the last possession. But, you know, I do worry because it's all going to emanate from him now versus that whole team move the ball that was last year. I wonder if he can ultimately be that distributor we're going to need going forward.
And Lee, I appreciate the phone call. Really good stuff. And I like it when Celtics fans have got the other sort of the other side of the coin there. I do, because this Celtics team is confusing. It's 7-4. You feel like, okay, the record's not all that bad. They play together for another few weeks. Maybe they can pull this thing together and ultimately be the team that we expect them to be. And we'll speak with Chris Mannix from NBC Sports Boston and Sports Illustrated coming up shortly. He's still on the air right now doing his thing, so it could be a little while. But that's what he preached yesterday in the piece that he wrote for Sports Illustrated's NBA crossover. You guys can find it online. And the headline to his piece is, "Don't panic. The Celtics offense will click in due time." But Lee, just to quickly before we go to break here, to your point, I feel like we all remember what the Celtics looked like last year after the Gordon Hayward injury, after the Kyrie Irving injury, especially, I don't know, late February through the end of May, right? Because that's when this team really was at its best. That's when we saw this team fight for everything that they had. And that's when this whole city fell in love with the Boston Celtics because they were suddenly overachievers. You lost your two All-Stars, and you're still competing with LeBron in Game 7 to get to the NBA Finals? I mean, come on. What's not to love about that, right? But what I think you're forgetting is that, what, in the first game of the season, Gordon Hayward goes down with that horrific injury. And by Game 3, because of Kyrie Irving's MVP level of play, the Celtics started to embark on what became a 16-game winning streak, shocking the entire NBA. It's shocking this team, shocking their head coach. And that's what set the tone and tempo and expectations for last year. And that 16-game winning streak happened on the shoulders of Kyrie Irving. So I'm not worried about Kyrie's character at all. It is Sports Radio, WEEI. It is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, I promise you, I see you guys there, Tyler, Curtis, Paul. We'll get to your phone calls at 617-779-7937. Sports Radio, WEI, it is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. Find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And we will be joined by Chris Mannix from NBC Sports Boston and Sports Illustrated coming up in the 1 o'clock hour now. He's been pushed back because he is still on the air doing post-game live. And that's what happens when you have a game like this. Everything sort of gets extended, right? Because, let's face it, it's a game worth talking about. And I will say this, I'm going to get to the calls in a second, but to the texter here that says, "Are you serious? The Brown video was not just like LeBron. I'm not sure you actually watched it. If that's your view of what Brown said, I usually believe that you're level-headed and it makes sense. Therefore, you must be drumming up controversy." That is so false. I've watched that video a handful of times. We played it incessantly last night here on Late Night. It is so un-Celtic-like. It is so not what we expect out of this team. This team has not won anything yet, and that's what pisses me off about that video. They're acting, to start this season, they've been behaving like a team that's already won their first championship together. To me, that video sort of I don't know, smells like, remember how many times we heard Doc Rivers say that that starting five that won the 2008 NBA championship has never been beaten? Remember that? We heard that year after year after year in the playoffs, that that team was perfect in the playoffs. You know, it's one of those things where when you listen to Jaylen Brown and you hear Jaylen Brown, to me, it doesn't have the music in the background and the pyrotechnics that you had when LeBron James did it. But when you listen to it, we're going to play it right now. When you listen to these words, to me, this doesn't speak of somebody that's humble. This doesn't speak of somebody that actually knows what they're saying, knows what they're getting into. How could he? He's never even been in the NBA Finals, let alone experienced the pressures of winning one, not two, not three, not four. Dude's talking about winning five in the next 6 years.
So, 28-year-old Jaylen. How many championships 28-year-old Jaylen got?
I'm not going to jinx myself, but aside 6 years, I'm going to go ahead and say five or six. I'm going to say that.
So you win in the championship every year from here?
I don't want to jinx myself.
You already did. You already said it.
And I don't play to lose, so I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm going to give it a five.
Like, I love this team. I'm the biggest green teamer there is. You guys know that. I don't feel comfortable really bashing this team. I don't think that they're worth bashing completely right now, but it's little things like that, and that's not the first sort of little clue about what's wrong with this year's team. It's just one of many. You know, the habit that this team's gotten into of blowing double-digit leads on the road like they did in Indy, like they did against the Nuggets. It's Kyrie Irving pulling the stunt that he pulled at the end of that Nuggets game. There's just little things like that that have irked me about this year's basketball team. Doesn't mean I don't love them. Doesn't mean that my expectations for them have sort of fallen off, because they have not. But these are the lessons that they need to learn before they graduate to being a team that's capable of winning one championship, let alone five or six championships consecutively. So it is Sports Radio WEI. It is Late Night. Room for you at 617-779-7937. Back out to the phones we'll go. Let's go to Tyler. Tyler's in Mansfield. Tyler, you're next up here on Sports Radio WEI.
Hey, Patrick. How are you tonight?
Good, Tyler. What's on your mind, man?
All right. Well, I mean, the Celtics team so far, I mean, they're 7-4 through 11 games. But I think, as many other callers, and I think you have agreed, that they're definitely below the expectation that we've all had with them so far this year.
Yep.
And I think that I know you talked about a little earlier about the Hayward trade, switching up the roster, and I think since it's so early in the season, they still have plenty of games left, they should just start exploring that idea of just rotating guys in just to try to see what works best, because although they're winning, they're not really winning good. I mean, like you just said, they're blowing double digit leads. Like, this team's going to clean up before the playoffs. So I don't think they're going to go very far if they keep playing like this.
And again, I hesitate to judge them based on 11 games, right? There's a long way to go, and the possibility is still very much there that by game 30, game 40, that this will look like a very different basketball team. But what's frustrating for me, Tyler, is the fact that we are 11 games in, and there's been this sort of unwillingness on Brad Stevens' part to try something different. The only real shakeup in the starting lineup that we've seen, there's been two of them. There's been the Aaron Baines starting in place of Al Horford, depending on the opponent's center, and we saw that all throughout the season last season. That's nothing new. And then we saw in the back-to-back game situation 2 weeks ago, Gordon Hayward not play, so that was a different starting lineup that day. Other than that, he is stuck with this five. It's almost like he's stubbornly sticking with this five. And I understand that they're clearly the five most talented guys on the team. Nobody's doubting that. But I think when you've got this much talent on this team and it's clearly not clicking together right now, there's no harm in mixing it up and trying different rotations and trying different groups of these guys to find what works. Because if you recognize, Tyler, that it's not working, and clearly, you know, all it takes is watching the games, I recognize it's not working. Brad Stevens and his incredibly large staff must recognize that it's not working as well.
Right. No, I completely agree. And especially where it's still so early into the season, you have time to sure change it up. It's not like this is at the end of the season where you got to figure it out now. You still have time to play around and tinker with the roster. But I have another question for you.
Yeah.
Based on everything so far in the season, I mean, again, it's only game 11, but how far do you expect right now for this team to go compared to before the preseason? How have your expectations changed? Are they still the same?
So if we go back, Tyler, I appreciate the phone call here. If we go back and we listen to every one of my shows that I've done since the beginning of training camp. So let's go back to the end of September. I said that I'm not going to judge this team until January 1st. Now, I thought by now they would start to look a little bit better. I thought by now that this team would start to gel a little bit, and we would start to see signs of life from Gordon Hayward, right? We saw that 118-point game against Milwaukee last week. And that, to me, I was like, okay, he's starting to look more like Gordon Hayward. But since then, he has regressed back to the pack. And I feel like the only way we're going to see Gordon Hayward graduate to that next level is by giving him the opportunity to take more shots. And as long as he's sharing the spotlight with Kyrie Irving, sharing shots with Jason Tatum, sharing opportunities with Jaylen Brown, he's never going to get out there and be the volume shooter that he needs to be to eventually morph back into the guy that we expected him to be when the Celtics made him the fourth richest player in the history of the league right now. Fourth largest contract in the NBA as we speak. $30-plus million a year. And that's a big reason why they don't want to bring him off the bench. I get that. But just because you move him to the bench right now doesn't mean he's going to finish the season on the bench. I just want him to go to the bench to build his confidence up a little bit, to put up 15 shots a night, to show us and to show himself that he's still capable of being a 20-point scorer in the NBA. You know how hard it is to score 20 points in the NBA, let alone score 20 points when you're sharing the ball with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Kyrie Irving and Al Horford? It's very hard to do. Unless your name is Kyrie Irving and you're going to take 30 shots sometimes, like, it's impossible to do. And I don't think Gordon Hayward is in a position right now to take shots away from those guys because he knows that he's not operating at close to 100%. But it is sports radio. WEI, it is late night. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. Let's stick with the calls right now. Let's go to Danny. Danny's in Fall River. Danny, you're next up here on late night.
Hey, Pat. How you doing?
I'm living the dream, Danny. How are you?
Good, good. So I just wanted to say, obviously we get the win tonight. Just wanted to get your thoughts on Tatum. It seems like he's hitting a little wall we thought he was going to hit last year.
Yeah, you know, and he at one point last year in, like, January, he hit it for, like, a week, and everybody was all, he's hitting the wall, hitting the wall, hitting the wall, and he broke through it, and he never hit it again. What's troubling to me is that he's seemingly hitting this wall 11 games in. Like, he shouldn't be tired right now. This wall shouldn't exist right now. So for me, I don't think it's so much a physical thing, Danny. I think it's psychological. I think it's mental, because I think that there's something to, especially when you're young, if you're Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, for that matter. Last year, let's face it, they didn't have to look over their shoulders at all. Like, they didn't look over their shoulders and see a guy that's been an all-star in the Western Conference that shares the same position that they have in Gordon Hayward. They looked over their shoulder, they saw Terry Rozier. They didn't see Kyrie Irving, right? So they almost feel like they've got to give up shot opportunities to these guys. And if you look at the way that Jason Tatum plays, you know, last year he was very, very, very efficient. This year, he's wildly inefficient. So even on the nights where he's giving you 16 to 20 points a night, they're not an efficient 16 to 20. I feel like he's going to go back and watch film from what he did last year. Because last year, he attacked the basket, got to the free throw line, and that's ultimately what made him a great mid-range shooter and even a good three-point shooter. Those shots were open because of the threat of him going to the basket. This year, he's not attacking the basket the way he did last year, and I think that's a big part of his problem.
Yeah, I totally agree. I still think this team is like top three in the NBA, a really good team, that one of the deepest teams on, with the bench coming out. Couple callers back, you know, kind of complained about Kyrie taking over and how it's his show, but like, why did we sign him? That's what we signed Kyrie for, superstar.
Yeah, I got no problem with that. I want to see this from Kyrie. This is the guy that the Celtics need Kyrie to be, and Danny, I appreciate the phone call. I mean, there's no question in my mind that Kyrie Irving, for this team to win at the level that we expect them to win, Kyrie Irving has to be the alpha dog. He's got to be the leader offensively for this team. Averaging 29.5 points a game over the last five, there's nothing wrong with that, especially because he's recognizing that the team needs it right now. He knows better than we do that Jason Tatum has struggled. He knows more than we do that Jaylen Brown, up until the second half tonight, has struggled. He knows better than we do that Al Horford and Gordon Hayward aren't scoring at the level in which they need to score at for this team to win basketball games. So what has he done? He has done what leaders do. And he has sort of upped his game because the Celtics have needed him to up his game. That's what leaders do in the NBA. I have no problem with Kyrie Irving taking over offensively for this team, especially right now, because nothing else is working. It is Sports Radio, WEI. Room for you guys at 617-779-7937. Let's grab one more here. Let's go to Paul. Paul's in Concord. Paul, you're next up here on WEI.
Hey, Patrick, thanks again. I've never really responded to another caller before on the talk line, but that first guy that was kind of tearing his hair out worried about Kyrie, and like the, your previous caller just said, like, superstars bail teams out. Steph Curry has bailed out the Warriors. Kevin Durant has bailed out the Thunder and the Warriors. Like, we have one of the greatest players, and in response to last year's team, how this year, like, Kyrie Irving was on last year's team for that 16-game winning streak.
He was the reason why they had the 16-game winning streak, let's face it. I mean, what happened, Gordon Hayward went down, and Kyrie, again, like we just talked about right now, he upped his level of play because the Celtics needed it, and he put the team on his shoulders for that 16-game winning streak.
Right. I could not be happier with Kyrie Irving right now. The Jason Tatum issue, I took a look at the box score. I was watching at work, so I didn't watch the whole game, but Jason Tatum led the team in rebounds. So if he's off his game, if he's not used to being the third or fourth option, where last year he was the first or second option, literally every time down the court, he's doing other things to help the team win. And I think he might feel like he has to rush his shot. If he's getting less shots, and every time he has the ball, he feels like, I have to score because I'm only going to get 12 touches instead of 25 in this game. So there might be a little bit of an adjustment period with him, but you know that he and the rest of the team is going to be, after 40, 50 games, All-Star break, they're going to be 35 and 15. They're going to be just fine.
Paul, I love the optimism, man. I need guys like you to continue to call this show because I need it for my own mental health. I appreciate the phone call. It is Sports Radio. WEI, it is late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, we'll be joined by Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated, from NBC Sports Boston. He's over there doing the game tonight, talking about the Celtics in the post game tonight. And quite frankly, you know, he wrote this great piece, and the reason why I called him was because he wrote this great piece yesterday for Sports Illustrated. It says, "Don't panic. The Celtics offense will click in due time." And I feel like there's been quite a bit of panic to start this season, and rightfully so. This team went into this year with huge expectations, and at 7-4, the record is one thing, but it goes so far beyond the record, right? It's the style in which that they have played, and it's ultimately the disappointment that's been Jason Tatum, the disappointment that's been Gordon Hayward. Those things are the troubling things that are really pissing off Celtics fans, worrying Celtics fans, and wondering exactly what's wrong with this basketball team and what they need to do to address those problems. I will address those problems with Chris Mannix when we come back right here, Sports Radio, WEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.